Beaming live on a radio rope from a world near you, it's CKNW, our radio station, servicing the city of Adobe Skyscraper, the surrounding Adobega County, and if weather permits, even further than that.
Join us this week for an episode of this evening's show, originally broadcast October 28th, 1976. We'll be talking about the wonders of radio pods. What are they? What do they do? Who works in them? And who else sneaks into them? We'll also learn about 80-year-old kids and just what that entails. All of this and more on this week's This Evening Show.
It's This Evening Show. It's This Evening Show. It's This Evening Show.
Welcome to this evening's show. If you're a regular listener to this show, or if you read last month's edition of Blitz Magazine, you know that we're broadcasting out of an abandoned monorail station north of town.
That town being the city of Adobe Skyscraper.
Yes, right. Hopefully the broadcast is coming through clear and bright, and that's if you're listening just outside the studio door next to the koi pond, or if you're thousands of miles away.
In Bilalu, for example.
Sure. Bilalu, Western Slope, even some other country.
Of course, if you're in another country, you might not understand. We don't speak Moktavian hardly ever on this show.
Do they speak another language in Bilalu? They do, don't they?
That's in the Navas Coast, Charlie. They speak as we speak, just with an island feel.
Well, I thought they had different words for things, like different slang.
Well, you might say that, but in reality, it is just a different inflection of the same word.
Okay, so for example, I thought they called coconuts something else, like a banshee or something.
I've only ever heard them call coconuts.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, but I remember when I was on vacation there. I went out to eat at this restaurant, and this guy had ordered some soup, and it was way too hot. He started screaming and cussing, acting really crazy, you know?
I can imagine that.
And some native people, some Navas Coasters, were talking, saying something like, a banshee, me.
I don't know what the hell you just said.
Well, I couldn't understand everything they said because it was like a mumbling to each other.
Sort of like a private conversation.
Like a private commentary.
So, how does this relate to coconuts?
Oh, well, they use the term a banshee instead of coconut.
I don't think we or any of our listeners, for that matter, are following you.
I'm just saying they used a different word. Instead of saying, like we would say, that man is truly coconuts, they said something like, that man is truly a banshee.
Wait, are you talking about a coconut, the actual object, or about the slang term for insane?
I assume they were using it to refer to his mental state, yeah. They use a different word, right?
Well, they might have been calling him a banshee, saying nothing about his mental state.
Well, they might, but I don't think so. I mean, this guy was really coconuts. You should have heard him scream.
Well, if anyone listening in Navas Coast would like to illuminate on this issue, we will listen. But as I was saying earlier, even if you cannot understand the words we're saying, you should be able to hear us crystal clear. Even way over in Gzvaig. And the reason for that is the topic of this evening's show.
That's right, a tribute to the operation and science of radio pods.
Radio pods.
Yes, radio pods allow us to broadcast all across the globe with minimal interference. Truly a top scientific marvel of the past 15 years. And they can be found all over the country, too. If you've ever come across a small lot surrounded by a chain-link fence with a little building in the middle and a cable that extends upwards into the sky until it disappears, then you've seen the base of a radio pod.
Yeah, I've seen lots of those. There's one over by the Duck Pond on Coin Street, downtown.
There are hundreds in the city.
There are, and many in the countryside, too. Now, the radio pod itself is an actual pod, about 1,000 square feet or so, that's suspended in the lower exosphere, hundreds of miles above the surface of the planet. They're equipped with all sorts of dials and levers and many broadcast antenna with which they spew their information across the world to receiver towers and headset pickup wires.
And cyborg janitor's brains.
True.
So why do they need to be tethered to the ground? Is that so they don't float away?
Well, since they're in a stationary orbit, they only float away when the planet stops spinning or when it implodes.
That's right, those cables, which are sometimes referred to as radio ropes, serve two purposes. And here to tell us more about that is Deanna Groversfield, who's been a Radiopod technician since the early 60s, when they just started dreaming this stuff up. Is that right?
That's right, John.
Well, thanks for coming all the way out here to talk with us. Can you explain a little more detail what Radiopods are and how they work?
My pleasure. As John was just saying, these radio ropes serve two purposes for Radiopods. The first is to transmit signal from the ground up to the radio pod itself. You see, these radio ropes are quite technical. In addition to being hundreds of miles in length and very strong, they are also insulated so that any RF signal we send through them will be completely isolated from the noisy atmospheric environment.
Noise from stars?
Stars, pulsars, weather balloons, you name it.
So you can start your global broadcast with zero added noise?
Yes, and zero noise is coming in, doesn't get amplified by the solar watt gain tubes, which allows for clear global transmission.
Doesn't the broadcast signal get hit with interstellar radio waves whenever you send it out of a radio pod back to the surface of the planet? What about that?
Well, haven't you ever heard a low hum or a sort of electric squiggly sound in your radio?
Zip snakes. I call those zip snakes.
Yeah, that's what you're hearing.
So, in addition to the insulating aspect of the radio ropes, what other major purpose do they serve?
Their other purpose is rather utilitarian, I am afraid. They simply serve as the elevator cable for the access car.
So, you gotta take an elevator to space to get to those radio pods?
That's right. Each morning around 3 a.m., a new crew will pile into the access car down here on the planet's surface, and 45 minutes later, they're up in the radio pod, ready to relay signal for the next 12 hours. And the same thing happens in the afternoon.
So what happens to the crew already in space?
Oh, they take the access car back down to the planet's surface after they've been relieved.
So let me understand this. Until someone sends up the access car, these people are stuck up in space in a broadcast pod?
Oh, well, they can call the car up to them with the switch of a knob in emergencies if they need to, but that is generally frowned upon. Sometimes crews do get stuck up there for longer periods of time, but there are very few casualties.
Well, what's the worst thing that's ever happened?
Oh, definitely the Fox Barn Run tragedy. Fox Barn is a radio station magnate out of Para. They broadcast mostly sports and talk shows, where one of the pods, Fox Barn Run, had some technical difficulty when they were trying to push the limits of the elevator cable and get into a higher orbit. The cable broke, which never happened, so that was weird, and they couldn't contain them before they floated off into space, presumably to their doom.
No one could catch them?
No one was really prepared to catch them, you know?
I'm too close to the sun. song.
So, what is it like riding up into space on an elevator?
It makes people a little queasy the first time because you are moving really fast and gravity changes and so forth, but it's mostly like any glass elevator ride, just longer. I usually bring a good book.
I think I'd just look out the window.
Yeah, but the windows are really small, remember?
Oh, right.
So what does it take to get clearance to go into a radio pod?
Well, just get a job with a broadcast station as a relay engineer. You can get certified in a matter of months, or else be a cyborg janitor and get on a cleaning crew that goes up once a week. Just don't get caught trespassing. They'll make sure that you never listen to the radio again.
That's messed up.
So, any last words of advice or insight about radio pods you'd like to share with our audience tonight?
Yes, you should make a habit of looking towards the skies around 8 p.m. at night, especially on clear nights with a new moon, and you can see the radio pods blinking up in space like tiny blinking stars. You can also see the elevator cars going up and down across the horizon if you get a good pair of infrared binoculars.
Yes, it's a beautiful sight. I have seen it and it is very cool. Well, again, thanks for coming all the way out here to talk with us about radio pods. I hope our listeners, especially those far away, have a stronger appreciation for the manner in which their broadcast is being distributed to them.
I'm sure they do. It was my pleasure.
Deanna Groversfield, radio pod technician extraordinaire.
I thought you could go up into radio pods if your goal is to collect trash.
Space trash?
Any debris in space is trash. It can cause disasters.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Those are space fishermen, I think. Those are mostly cyborg janitors, but not always, right?
Yeah, not always, or at least I know somebody who did that, and they weren't cyborg janitors.
How do they catch trash in space?
I think they use a large net on the end of a long pole.
Oh, like a butterfly net.
Much larger. Think a fishing net for catching east carp.
Oh, a fishing net. That would be heavy, but there's no gravity, right?
Yeah, I guess gravity won't hurt you so much up there. Anyhow, these guys catch massive amounts of garbage every year, and then when they get back to the surface, they sell it to people, since it's all been in space.
Couldn't you just sell some regular trash and make people think it came from space?
You could, but you'd have to find the right person who would believe you. The actual space fishermen keep meticulous records of their finds. I think they use photographs.
Well, a picture is worth looking at, especially a picture of trash in space. That looks just like the trash you're about to buy.
Now, here's a caller who's going to tell us the most interesting piece of trash that they've ever purchased from a space fisherman. Caller?
Yeah, I bought a can of beans that were in space and brought back to the planet, and then a few months later, I ate them. I didn't get sick either, but they weren't so good.
And did you see photographic evidence that these beans were indeed in orbit at some time?
No, but the guy who sold them to me described it exactly. And so that was good enough for me because he described it to a T.
How much did these beans cost you?
$100.
Was it worth it?
No.
One interesting thing about radio pods is, at any given time, something like 15% of them are not in use. Apparently there are so many up there they have to take shifts or else the airwaves become too cluttered. Now this means there are empty radio pods which are still capable of broadcasting globally just floating up there. And sometimes people, crafty people, will break into the radio pods and do their own broadcasting.
An underground broadcast from hundreds of miles in the air.
Exactly. And here with us in the studio tonight is someone who, on multiple occasions, has led a group of peers into radio pods to broadcast something to the ground below. His name is Marshall Gabriel. Thanks for joining us. What's the group you're a part of, and why do you break into radio pods?
Well, hello, John and Louie and Charlie and guests out there. My name is Marshall Gabriel, and I am a hobo. I have been for many years. Me and my co-hobos will periodically, like maybe on a monthly basis, break in the radio pods with the sole purpose of sending out information and ideas to hobos all over the world. We have a global network that needs to stay well-informed.
And what is a hobo exactly?
We live off the land of the city. We maintain trees and animals of the city. We are dedicated to a life of free-range movement and stewardship. And we're global.
So you don't have a job?
Well, living is itself a full-time job.
Now, how do you break into radio pods? You hijack an elevator car, I presume.
Now, that's a question I cannot answer for self-indictment concerns, you understand. Suffice it to say, we hijack a radio pod for a night's broadcast, and no one ever knows it, except, of course, the hobos listening in and anybody they might mention it to. In fact, people might suspect that their radio pod has been in the service of hobos when they show up to find it very clean. We leave no trace, and in fact, we will improve the pod as a rule.
Have you ever been in a radio pod that was too clean and you couldn't improve it?
There is always a polish that can happen.
Yeah, or you could just trash the place and start from scratch.
Could, but we never do.
So, what sorts of things do you broadcast about?
Well, information mostly, like where is food growing in the city? What's the animal situation like? Where do you find shade? Especially where do you find shade? Now that's something all of us are always interested in.
And you just broadcast this information out on some designated frequency?
Yes, but it always changes depending on what radio pod we occupy. We have a hobo code scrawled into posts and on abandoned doors all across the land that lets everyone who's in the know, well, know what station to tune into and when.
How come you never get caught?
Well, we just keep the elevator car at the radio pod, and there's a way to keep it there where they can't override it from the ground. Now, I'm not going to go into any details.
And they're never waiting for you when you get down?
No, not yet. If they ever are, we'll just ignore them. I don't think they mind. Or if they do, they don't let on. We're a good group, us hobos. We keep things nice as can be.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for joining us, Marshall.
It's been my pleasure. Hobo!
Thank you.
Now, hobos aren't the only ones who sneak into radio pods. Our next guest here has a story about a radio pod that happened to his brother. This is Eric Neptune, and it was your younger brother Nathan who somehow got himself in a radio pod and actually got stranded. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Nathan's in high school, and he always wanted to play guitar on the radio. So he just figured, along with his friends, that the easiest way to do that would just be to break into a radio pod and do a direct broadcast through one of the emergency DJ microphones. So he did it.
How did he get into the radio pod?
Well, he just snuck in with the cyborg janitor crew. I don't know how. I guess he just got a janitor costume from high school or something. I think it was a new crew, so they didn't know one another very well. Anyway, he stayed after they all left, and then he played his guitar over the radio, and we all heard it. It sounded weird, but cool.
How did he sneak a guitar up there, too?
I think it was a little backpacking guitar, and he did it in a mop bucket or something. So after he played the song for a while, obviously people started to know, because it sounded so weird. His plan was to call up the elevator car and just leave, but somehow the call buttons didn't work.
Sabotage.
I don't know, but they couldn't get the elevator to work at all on the ground either. So they had to call Carter Island Rescue. And they sent a high atmosphere helicopter up there to get him because they were afraid he might run out of air. That was expensive too. So he got grounded. But I think it was worth it.
Yes, Carter Island Rescue is who you want to call for any rescue situation you might have, but they are quite expensive. It sounds like a close call, but it makes for a good story.
Yeah. So, can I get a t-shirt or something?
Here, you can have mine.
yes, but it's all good. Conquered Island Rescue. It is a pertinent question. Did someone bring simple minds in? Seems they did, but it's all good.
We've just received a call from Deepak Holiday, and he's on his way to the monorail station here now, and he's bringing along a special guest. Remember a few weeks ago when we were going to interview Jeremy Scrines from the Scrines Aging Institute, but he had a potluck dinner conflict? Well, he's going to be here tonight, very soon.
Yeah, Deepak had to get him in on his motorcycle.
That's true. Well, look, it seems that they're coming in the studio right now. That's perfect timing for our upcoming medical segment.
And that's what's coming up next.
That's right. It's our pharmaceutical segment tonight. And we're going to look at the treatment of a social disorder known as the 80-year-old kid. To join us here is Dr. Jeremy Scrine of the 80-year-old kid research team, the 80 Yucks.
Yeah, so talk about how they're being able to have such success with treatment of 80-year-old kids as their patrons. Tell us about that and introduce yourself, please.
Yeah, this is Jeremy. Jeremy Scrine. I'm a scrine.
Yeah. Very funny, Scrine.
That's right. I'm an expert. I'm the expert on 80-year-old kids, you know? Well, anyways, I'm the expert, and sometimes there's lots of medicine involved, and other times there's not any medicine involved. So there's a real target there to focus your pharmaceutical sales. What's that? A representative phone call?
Hey, this is Rick. I got a question about 80-year-old kids. How do you keep them kids 8 years old?
Why don't you just ask me? I'm right here.
Are you an 80-year-old kid?
Well, yeah. My doctor had me on here, but, you know, I gotta say, since I have before that, you know, he fools me all the time. He's not that great of a doctor.
Yeah, what's wrong, patient?
Yeah, well, while I've got you here, I want to know why you're always trying to fool me. Trying to give me medicine that's not real medicine.
I'm not trying to fool you. I just want to help.
Look, what do you think those things are?
Many behavioral traits that are associated with being an 80-year-old kid.
Right.
So, I mean, there are a lot of them.
Hundreds.
So,
how many true-to-form 80-year-old kids can there be?
Well, I'm a 80-year-old kid, and I'm right here.
He's one.
So all these symptoms, he wears gym shorts on his head, he invites you out for corned beef breakfast, puts a peppermint in the coin slot. All of these symptoms describe this fellow here.
Yeah, because he's an 80-year-old kid.
Oh, do you want to get some corned beef breakfast?
How many 80-year-old kids do you think exist?
Well, here's one right here.
Well, this concludes our medical segment. We'll be right back with another song after a short brief pause.
It's Wonder Herb, tasty steak, it's perfectly round, all the way around. It's perfectly cut, perfectly shaped, perfectly smashed for a perfect taste. It's perfectly round, all the way around. It's a choice to make for a perfect steak tonight.
I'm John Starbird.
Deepak Halliday here.
Just Dust.
Yep. Keep your kongs up. You know.